Greetings, Earth Explorers. Welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the result is always positive. This program is dedicated to the exploration of the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving in a car across the frosty desert tonight or listening while at work on your computer, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and where we might be going than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. For the next 3 hours, you will be traveling safely beyond the limits of mortality. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. Next week, we will have Michael Horn on the program. He is the domestic representative for the Billy Meyer testimony of the interaction of the Pleiarians with Earth, namely Mr. Meyer himself. We will have 3 hours of the most amazing evidence that off-worlders have visited our planet and that they have a deep concern about our development and progress. You do not want to miss that program. Tonight, we have the most fascinating author, Samson Orion, on our program, author of Manifest Zero. During the next 3 hours, you are about to learn more about the relationship between the immortal human and the mortal being than you thought possible. Samson Orion discovered quite early the double handicap of abundant imagination and curiosity. At first amused, he soon became appalled by the general insanity we endure and allow to pass as life. In no time at all, he proved to be a tremendous disappointment to both parents, teachers, and all ritual guardians of the status quo. Later, while ranging through such varied jobs as waiter, roofer, masseur, bookkeeper, carpenter, and counselor, his attention was always focused on alternatives to the ordinary. After 30 years of seeking and experimenting with consciousness, something horrific and glorious happened. During a much-needed period of rest after this event, it happened. Lacking hindsight or even a point of reference, Samson found himself in a new place. A wonderland of simultaneous realities, planes, or dimensions. On a whim, he began to write about what he saw and heard. The result is the incredible journey called Manifest Zero. There's no adventure, no hero, no explosions or mystery. Instead, his report is an eloquent and powerful description of the mortal experience of we, the eternal being. His otherworldly instruction of who we are, what we may become, and how we are linked together as a species is the essence of humanity at its finest. So if you are happy, blissfully, and deeply content, by all means, avoid truth at all costs. But what if complete happiness and sense of purpose or existence has eluded you? If you have always known things could be better, much better, then you need to hear this interview. Please welcome with me Samson Orion. How are you?
I'm just great, Brooke. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I have to admit, it took me a couple of weeks to read your book. I couldn't put it down, yet I had to think about each concept for a couple of days.
It's pretty dense.
I couldn't help it. I want to talk about the whole thing, but we only have 3 hours, so...
All right, let's give it a go.
Yeah. First, I'd like you to describe the experience that led you to the point where you could see backward into the now or forward into the now. How did you come about writing the words that became Manifest Zero?
My experience is steeped in my own personality and the things that happen, but the actual pressures that brought it about are pretty common. There are, I couldn't say infinite stories of people that have awakened, become enlightened, had religious experiences, any number of supernatural, paranormal, expanded experiences that have come out of their being in prison, out of their being tortured, out of their being isolated under extreme pressures from grief or loss. And in that pattern, mine happened that way too. I had been doing my various searchings and my various explorations, mostly into magic and mysticism and energy fields of the human body. I had been doing massage as a profession for a number of years and was really fascinated by the subtleties and nuance that a body puts off that you can feel, that an outside body can actually pick up and sense, even without touching sometimes. And I had been exposing myself privately, just locked away for months and months. I had let myself go in many ways. I had arranged it so that I didn't need to work. I was camping out in somebody's backyard. I mean, I was just driven in some way, and I got tired of it. I said, to heck with it. I'm just going to go back to my normal life. And, you know, maybe I should write. I mean, it came just like that. I wasn't really an author at the time. I hadn't ever thought about it or considered it very much. I just had this idea. Why don't I sit down and write? And I did. And on that very first evening, sitting at the keyboard, I found that I was sitting there, the person that I recognize as myself, the way that I think about myself and consider myself to be. And I was typing. And I noticed that my hands on the keyboard were typing, but they didn't feel like my hands anymore, or at least they felt like my hands, and there was another layer there. And I stayed with that layer and never came out. It took about 17 or 18 months I was in that way. I was in two places at the same time, sometimes more than two places. It's very difficult to describe. Our language really doesn't have words or concepts to convey this sort of thing. I'll do my best. I continued to do the everyday things that I normally did, which is getting up in the morning, brushing my teeth, going to the store, buying groceries, as common and mundane a thing as you can possibly imagine, and my explorations and researches, reading books and so forth. But at the same time, I was interpreting all of those scenes, the grocery store, the door handle on my car, what a pencil felt like to hold, the sensation of that. I was feeling and sensing and recording, observing all of those things slightly differently, but not either or, simultaneously. Occasionally, I would get a third or even a fourth layer added on top of that, where I was seeing the first two that I've just so loosely described, and there would be yet another angle that I was looking at these very same incidents and occurrences, my thoughts, bodily functions, just how nice it feels to take a long, hot shower and let that water cascade down on me. I mean, just the most minute little thing that normally I would have ignored just because it's so commonplace, just because I've done it so many times. But something, at least, was recognizing this as a brand new, vital, and vibrant experience and was just fascinated by it. But
you know what it sounds like?
What?
It sounds like birth. You know, we come into mortality as, you know, a spiritual being into a physical being. And we have all of these sensations that we can't have as an ethereal being. And unfortunately, as an infant, the only thing that we can do is either cry or sleep as a result. But here you are, a sentient being in command of language, and now you're experiencing all these inputs again as a fresh.
I think that's a great analogy. And I feel strongly that is what babies do when they come in. They are, let us say, just accept whole cloth that they are coming from a place where they remember everything or have been in a different form as such. But this physical body that they're in, 8.5 pounds, 19 inches, doesn't have even command of its limbs.
Exactly. And the world is no longer 98.6 and a night.
Right. It's not wet anymore.
Yeah,
it's not warm anymore. It's quite a transition. But yes, but here I was with not only, a fully matured body that could walk and talk and sense and think and record and memory and so on and so forth, but I was experiencing the newness and the let's call it oldness at the same time. It was really amazing. And it was never jarring or frightening in any way and that I can't account for, but I was so fascinated by it maybe that I just wanted more of it and certainly didn't run from it, but it stayed, as I said, for approximately a year and a half. And after a while, that became the real measure of the profundity of that experience, because anybody can leave this particular reality. Anybody can get a different view for a while.
Well, you know what kind of gave me the kinship with this book as I was reading it? I got into it a little ways, and you wrote, consider, perhaps real is not what you assume it to be. Perhaps real is not where you think it to be. Perhaps real applies to elsewhere, a place entirely other than here. And I didn't have the same experience, but I asked these questions too, I guess, I don't know, maybe 40 years ago. And I kind of went back to life as usual and got out of it because I had to eat every day. And
Nasty habit. Got wrapped in
the world, I guess.
Yeah.
But I remember having those thoughts, and I too wrote some things in a journal. But this book is unbelievably eloquent. I mean, just to read any sentence in it is so prosaic. It just blows me away. But keep going.
The area the section of that you're reading from in the book, my consideration was, there are so many things that everything in fact, in our world, in our reality, the things that we have discovered as human beings, the things we have created, the tools we have shaped, the way everything is based on certain immutable facts, things that we can accept without any question whatsoever. Like gravity, we know that if we jump off of a stair or a chair, that we're going to hit the ground. Furthermore, I learned from doing some skydiving years and years ago that we know exactly when we're going to hit the ground. We're counting on our contact with the earth based on our gravity, based on our weight, momentum, all that stuff that you have to do problems for in physics when you first take it. Skydiving, since I could fall longer than any experience told me I would before I hit the ground, disrupted all my thinking. It was an amazing you hit the ground in no more than a second, but now here it is 2 seconds, 3 seconds. It was a fascinating
sort of like
thing.
The coyote hitting the ground long after he disappears from the screen.
So there's gravity that we know we take into account. There's just a bunch of physical laws, and not just physical laws. I mean, we know how human beings act. We know what personalities to expect. Some are better, and some are more kinder and more generous, and all this sort of thing. But we know all of these things. However, there are certain things that show up again and again and again in every mythology and every history and every culture and every time in our history, no matter where, no matter different races, different countries, just different periods of time. And we all have, as human beings, we have these wonderful concepts that we idealize and we aspire to, nobility, truth, honor, grand things, magnificent things. Poets speak of them, songwriters write of them, all this kind of, but they don't have, they're not here. They don't show themselves here. They show themselves up here in spurts and dashes every so often. Occasionally you have someone that rises to the occasion, but not with the consistency of gravity. So we don't plan that I didn't see anywhere else. We don't plan our lives on things that happen once in a while. We plan, we build our houses, we construct our monuments, we build our hopes, our dreams and stuff on things that are concrete, things that are reliable, things that are in this reality, things that are in this world, things that physics can support, things that are emotional thinking. But nobility, honor, these are the lofty things. The things that we idealize the most are rare. How can that be? How can you build a world populated, take command of all the other species and life forms and stuff, for good or for bad? And we're not going to get into whether this is a should-be sort of a thing. But the fact is that human beings have to, taken charge of this planet for good or for bad, for right or for wrong, based on all these sound concepts, except for the things that we idealize the most.
Well, interestingly enough, as I look through history, and I'm somewhat of an enthusiast, the leadership that actually sits in the seat of power of civilizations almost never displays the kind of concepts that you just talked about.
It's not our nature.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, most of the people that I talk to, as I go around to conventions and interview people on this program, there are lots of people that think about higher relationships or higher vibrations of the human race, but they don't end up in leadership positions.
But that's not the significant point. Yeah, I understand, and I agree with you that they think about it and they realize and they feel it, but they don't do it. The question is, where do the thoughts come from?
Yeah.
Why would they think of it? I can understand thinking about how to build something in such a way that a cup won't fall off of a shelf, because I understand that if it does, it'll shatter. I mean, I'm taking so many principles of life on this particular planet and this particular plane of existence into account.
So where does the inspiration come from? For the things that are not practical.
Right. I say they come from someplace else.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the Occam's razor. That's the simplest explanation. If they don't come from here, if we don't see them here, they must come from someplace else, rather than come up with some explanation specifically. It's a religious one. Maybe it's a spiritual one. Maybe, I mean, there's so many stories and explanations of what happens. But let's just go for the most fundamental approach. If it's not from here and we don't see it here, actively, consistently, and widespread, it must be from someplace else.
And it's not random chaos. These are organized, well thought out, digested, almost viral thoughts in their simplicity, in their compression of language. So they have to be very mature, not very.
Right.
Although, I mean, my engineering proctor one time told me, simplicity is the crown of genius, complexity the cloak of mediocrity.
Hmm.
So in order for these thoughts, these ideas, these concepts to become so pure and so inspirational, they are truly the fruits of genius, and genius is not chaotic. So
jeez, right.
Where is the source?
The source...
Now, maybe I got too far into it. Hang on just one minute.
Sure.
Let me read something else out of your book, and then we'll take a quick break here.
Okay.
I want to refresh my listeners. You might want to stop whatever you're doing, because this will take great concentration, because what I'm about to read should be about 5 pages, but it's actually only one short paragraph, so listen. Imagine, then, the existence of other realms, worlds and solar systems, and immense infinities filled with unfamiliar constellations. There, living within them, are all diverse manner of beings with abilities no less distinct or less remarkable than you yourselves possess. There are many ways in which consciousness and awareness, attributes which you consider to be of high value, may be configured other than in the housing of your familiar rendering and form. Regions and their populations exist where flesh is not of carbon base, where genetics are not by pairs in Numbers 23, where coincident placement within solid phased matter is essential, not denied, where weak force acts as collapsing object stationary in space. It is from another such place, otherwise configured, that I come to you, or come to address you. Very powerful words.
Yeah. Food for thought, and what I hope, for a lot of exploration, not just thought.
Yes. Now, the exploration, I think, is the unique nature of the human spirit. Whether we're, you know, going over the next hill or over the next ocean,
right,
or over the next expanse of space in our physical bodies, the exploration we do with our minds, well, I guess that's what this program is all about. So I guess that's what we want to get into when we come back. And we'll eventually get to where we think this source is, and then we're going to talk about some incredible concepts in this book. I can't believe how excited I am to finally find something in print that makes sense about it. But let me take a quick break, and we'll pay some bills.
Okay.
The Arc of Millions of Years, Volume 2, 2012, and The Harvest of the End Times is now off the presses. It can be purchased at arcofmillionsofyears.com. Make sure you spell that with a K, like Noah's Ark, or by visiting your favorite bookstore. Of course, it will soon be available at Amazon and Barnes & Noble, but the only place you can get an autographed copy of the book is through the website. If you have enjoyed Volume 1 of The Arc of Millions of Years, which clearly explains the creation of the Earth, you will need Volume 2 to explain why we are here and where we are going from here. If you want to know where the Ark of the Covenant is being held, or how the Sumerian language was found in Bolivia, or how ancient texts testify that off-worlders visited ancient peoples in South America, you need to read this book. My co-author E.J. Clark and I, for the first time, uncovered information you have never seen before. There is no doubt that off-worlders have been involved with the development and recovery of mankind after a series of cataclysms. You need to get your copy today at arcofmillionsofyears.com. And we'll take a short musical interlude. No, we'll do that in half an hour. All right. Let's get back to the book here.
Okay.
We are talking with Samson Orion and his amazing book, Manifest Zero. And we are exploring far beyond the realm of mere mortals, I think, into maybe non-physical and non-familiar ground where people might look for the source of inspiration or these great ideas of report. Mathematicians speak of it, poets speak of it, and Samson has tapped into something here that I think we need to discuss in depth. So let's continue. So where might you think that these realms, these other solar systems, other beings, are they in our universe or our dimension, or are they right next door?
Now we have to define terms.
Okay.
We don't even really know. Let's start a little bit tangential to this sort of thing. Let's go to something that I would say that everybody would say without question that they know. I'm going to use a word. And I doubt that anyone would doubt that they know what this word means or the implications of it or how to use it. Health. Simple word, right? Nothing, nothing weird about this. No metaphysical requirements necessary for understanding it.
Well, lawyers have had fun with it.
Yeah. That's applications to health. That's not health itself. I think you'll find, in fact, I know you'll find, because I'm a huge dictionary collector. If you look up health in the dictionary, you'll find that there's no definition for it.
Really?
Nope. We give words to define it such as a state of vigor. Can you tell me what that means?
Yeah, necessarily
robustness, vitality, lack of, and this is the significant one, lack of disease. I don't want to know. I don't know what it isn't. I just want you to tell me, you and anyone in the audience, what health is, but we can't define it. We really don't have a English. I would say that other languages do. Languages shape how we think, and maybe a Frenchman or an Armenian or a Chinaman or a Vietnamese. I'm guessing because I'm not that worldly in languages, but we have no sound definition of what health is. But if you look up disease, you will find that we can define it really, really well.
Because disease hurts.
Not going into the why of it, but why focus on that and not on health? We talk about health. We want to be healthy. We go to our doctor to maintain our health. Our doctor or our nutritionist or our chiropractor or our spiritual counselor has our good health in mind, but how can they really have our good health in mind if we don't know what health is? We can't think of it that way. We would have had a word for it or a way to describe it if we were really thinking about it comprehensively. In short, I have to conclude that we don't actually know what health is, and the number of diet books that are out there and the number of things to do if we don't feel well, each one written by a different author with a slightly different conclusion, kind of backs me up that we're guessing. So we get down to a little bit more esoteric stuff. As you mentioned, what about the universe? You know, is this source that I'm talking about, is it here? Is it this universe? We have all kinds of words. I use them in my book. You know, domain, reality, dimension, alternative reality, universe says, plural. Which are they? Where are they? Who are they? We don't know. We guess. We use them more or less interchangeably as I see. From what I've come across and looked into, we use them interchangeably, but we don't really have a definite, clear way to describe locus, location, nothing that we would accept, nothing like I can give you my street address where you can mail me a letter. I mean, that's pretty specific.
Mm-hmm.
The source is an aspect of ourselves. It, he, she, it, me, lives simultaneously in the way that I was living simultaneously while here in Georgia, in the United States, in my house, living, taking a shower and enjoying it the way that I had for so many years, while another aspect of me was appreciating it in a newfound sense simultaneously. I've had illusions in some of the writings that I've done that are not in the book that make me think that I'm being addressed or getting information from something or a being or someone that must live in some kind of a subatomic world. There was some references that just made me think of this, of compacted nucleuses and spinning electrons or something of that order. I've had the impression that I've been getting information from a place that has nothing housing matter as we know it, nothing in physicality, nothing solid, a place where everything transitions and flows from one state of being and form into another as per the moment of interaction with information or of thought changes them in such a way. I've had a number of ideas, and I'm certain that the biggest hindrance to understanding this in a way that this person, me, that I am with a flesh and blood brain can comprehend it is how do I translate these impressions? I get an image, and I say, this must be a subatomic world because it reminds me of protons and neutrons. But I have a little bit of a science background. If somebody else that had never had a science class, or was completely disinterested in that, were to receive whatever images and impressions that I got, it's unlikely that they would say, oh, I wonder if this is a subatomic world. They don't even have the language to frame that thought.
Exactly right.
So everything comes down to the translation. And that depends on me. And that depends on my experiences and how I interpreted those experiences.
So it's a little like everybody walks into the ballpark, but everybody in the stand actually has a different interpretation of the green grass.
And they're seeing a different game being played.
Yes, exactly.
Which we know every day when we read the sports page, right? Because the newscasters interpret it differently. One focuses on the pitcher. One focuses on how bad the umpires were.
That's the one I read.
I like your paper better.
So the source, like the last Super Bowl.
Oh, boy, yeah. Well, the source, though, is...
interesting thing is it appears, though, that like the grass, the source that you're talking about is absolutely pure. And it's actually pouring over everyone. But it's the interpretation of that truth, of that purity, that makes us individuals.
I would
say some might see a color and another might see a mathematical formula.
Exactly. I myself probably haven't remembered a dream maybe twice in my life. That doesn't mean that I don't dream. I wonder what if the places that I go when I dream, are so unusual that they simply don't translate into images back here. So when I get up in the morning, I can't remember them. I can't house them.
But you're changed.
I'm affected by them.
Mm-hmm.
I am affected by them.
Yeah, I too have a similar experience. Sometimes when I dream, I awaken, and I'm sad, and sometimes I'm so positive that absolutely nothing in this world can discourage me. But I really can't put it into words. It's images and pressures and vibrations that don't have words.
Right. Mostly it doesn't have words. You know something has happened, and you can feel it, and your body knows something has happened. But turning it into a picture or a story that you can retain here sometimes is beyond our grasp.
So I think I understand a little bit that hopefully everybody that's listening got up this morning and took a shower, but everybody had a different interpretation, or maybe
exactly.
Paid no attention at all to that experience. But the fact that you stood under the water and tried to absorb all of the meanings of that shower, that's incredible. And if you did that with every amount of stimulus, be it intellectual or otherwise, you know, a bird flying by, you would grow as a being.
You would expand beyond the box that you're in right now. You would not.
We're going to talk about the box later.
Yeah, you would not be the person that you are by any means. It's noticing and being alert and being open to being alert to things that you didn't even know you needed to be alert to. I had the experience one time it happened during that period of time, and I could feel my hair, what little I have left on my head, I could feel it growing. It was out of all of the things that happened, of which, you know, there are thousands that I could recount, but this is possibly the most amazing to me. I could feel my hair growing. Not only is that a level of intimacy with my body that I could never even imagine, but it was something that would never in a million years, given chance to think, what kind of a thing, I could never have occurred to me to even consider looking at such a place to notice.
Yeah, what clued you in?
I could feel it. I could feel it like the wind brushing against your face. You can feel it and you sense it. It was movement. I could feel the hairs growing. The most fascinating physical body experience that I can recall.
Well, one of the things that you so clearly state in your book. It says, bodies are multi-composite creatures. They live in many worlds simultaneously and have the skills and capabilities necessary for maneuvering in various realms of general invisibility to you now.
Mm-hmm.
So the physical, combing your hair and year after year watching it fall out with frustration, that's probably what everybody sees. But there's so much more to
there's
it.
There's so much more to that.
The adding of protein on a cellular level and pushing out of a follicle into...
Right, you can go scientific on it, you can go biological on it, you can go aesthetic on it, there's all kinds of directions, and most of them we just brush aside simply because we're not alert and because they're there every day, every minute. But to something that hasn't experienced this for the first, before, the simplest thing, the thing that we might consider, every man's trash is somebody else's treasure, right? I mean, it's just if you're not accustomed to it, if you don't know that you're supposed to throw it out, if you don't know that you're not supposed to notice it, well, it just may be really fascinating.
Well, that's one of the things that in my field, my area of physics is spectroscopy, and of course, the easy things to pick out are movements, changes in frequency, things that stand out from the background, but there were some pioneers like Dr. Townsend Brown, who did a tremendous amount of work on the background itself. And his work allowed us to do things that, well, in the 80s, nobody had ever thought about, because nobody ever sat down and actually tried to measure the background. We just took it for granted. And what you've done here is you've managed to interpret the background that we are exposed to from the time, we're 2 years old and can formulate our first words. There's so much noise. There's so much chaos in our world that we only see movement. We only see changes.
And we have to train ourselves not to get caught at any point and say, okay, here's a good place to rest. Let's look from here. Because let's take the example that you were just now giving. This man back in the 80s began to look at the background, but what was he looking at the background for? And what equipment was he looking at the background with? And how had that equipment been calibrated? And what range of elements or wavelengths or whatever it was that the machine was doing, what range was it viewing the background with? In short, it was already filtering and editing information just by its construction,
Absolutely. And actually, it gave birth, to the LIGO system, the Laser Interferometer Gravitational Wave Observatories, which nobody pays any attention to or knows about. They're pretty obscure, but they're down to the point now where they can measure 10^-22 centimeters of vibration, of change, which is, subatomic.
No, infinitesimal, yeah. Ultimately, the answer to your earlier question of what is the source has to be, it's me. It isn't anywhere else.
Really?
It has to be me.
So you always had it, or you're part of it?
Part of it.
Wow.
I'm part of it. It has to be me. By the simplest deduction, here we have just the known universe, what we call the known universe, visible by light traveling hundreds of billions of light years in distance, and inferable by redshifts and blueshifts and all the things that physicists know how to measure, and intuiting from various other factors and forms, just that one known universe. And you throw in however many more dimensions mathematicians can speak of, that there are...
More than I can remember right
now. Well, but there's more than one and more than two. Anyway, you take all of that, and let's just say, okay, great, there's more beyond that because there's an infinity of stuff out there finite. But if you just limit it to what we can see and what we can imagine, the vastness cannot be held in the human mind. So out of all of that, out of all the possibilities for life to be, out of all the possibilities for consciousness, alertness, awareness, sentience, thought, creation, creativity, anything to be, one source, no matter how profound, universal, or glorious, out of all of that chooses one human being on an obscure planet and an obscure galaxy somewhere in a corner to talk to me? That's it? Am I that special? I can't buy it that I'm that special. I say that that source talks to me, lets itself be known to me, feels itself in me and through me because it has to contact me and no one else. It has no option to go out and speak to you. I mean, you may have one, but my source can't come to anybody else.
But it does. Don't you think that the source, well, maybe a different source than what I'm talking about. Maybe it's one telepathic consciousness of all humanity, but I think that in my experience, these otherworldly or out-of-body inspirations go out to everyone, and each person, because of their frame of reference and maybe the age of their own soul, interprets that information differently. Like you said, a mathematician might see mathematical formulas, and a poet might see haiku. But for the source to be just that individual, then we would not see a homogeneity that we do in these kinds of ideas from race to race, from ancient civilization to ancient civilization. There's a commonality in these visions, in these feelings.
There is. And you have to be careful, once again, of how you're defining source.
Okay.
The universality that you speak of, we all of us, any of us, are connected. The furthest asteroid is connected, if only by gravitational force, to every speck and particle everywhere else. So if we're connected...
Way more than that.
Yeah, yeah, if that's just one way, but if there's that one way, there's many ways.
Mm-hmm.
And we have all of the commonality, the universality of thought, of oneness, the aspiration to reunite, to rejoin, to go to a higher place where we can all be together. Again, it has different flavors. These stories have different flavors and different shapes and are told slightly differently, but the theme is pretty much the same. So there's a connectedness that we all remember at some way, cellularly or in a past life or just intuitively, but there's a connectedness, there's a oneness, a universality that we all know about, and we can certainly tap into that.
But you're saying that the source being you...
The thing that's interested in me taking a shower is me.
Yeah.
Now, that thing...
You're the interface.
Ah, that thing is also part of the universality, and perhaps more adept at interpreting it or tapping into it than I am as I'm sitting here tonight on the telephone speaking with you. But at that level, I'm just talking about a different level of my awareness, a different aspect of my consciousness and alertness, not the source. I'm talking about what is it that talks to me that gets interested and having and observing my hair grow. I don't really know that the universal one needs to pick out Samson Orion in Georgia to find out how hair grows. It just sounds too silly.
No, I'm with you there.
but another aspect of Samson should and did find that fascinating because it's me.
Mm-hmm.
So I took that and other little ideas like that and said, well, okay, what am I listening to? What's talking? I mean, it's a stretch to call it talking to begin with, but it came out in typewritten words, so let's just say that it's language for now. And I started to have these ideas like, well, actually it came from my wife who screamed out at me because I'm at the keyboard for hour after hour after hour and forget to eat. And she yells out, come get some food. And she called my name. And I, of course, when I heard my name, I stopped typing and I looked up and I had the idea, what was it to just recognize that sound, those two sounds, Samson, and associate it with the fact that it was me?
Was it my body? Started writing again. Keep going. I'm being facetious.
Yeah, no, please.
No, I know the exact thing.
Did my body respond? Was it my mind? Was it my soul? Was it my? I mean, what's responding? And then I got into identity and all the other things that I've been talking about. Now watching myself shower and feeling myself shower and all this sort of thing.
So the I, the me,
the
I,
the yeah.
Myself,
what does it respond when somebody says, Dr. Agnew, Brooks, how are you? And how do you know it's you? What responds? What perks up and relates to that you should be listening to this person speak to you?
Yeah.
One of my
first responses is, oh, what did I do now?
Well, yeah, I've certainly been in that position more than once.
Well, one of the things that, unfortunately, in the world in which we live, there's no provision for multidimensional beings. We have to work, and we have to make a living, and we have to be successful and have savings and insurance and all of these things. This kind of, pausing in real time, what we call real time, to interpret some otherly time, kind of makes you unemployable, doesn't it?
Makes me unemployable.
Yeah, and me
makes
too.
Makes me as unemployable as a person can be.
I'm a consultant, which is just a very multi-syllabic word for unemployed.
Right. An excellent one. We do have, as a society, do have provisions for being multiple and getting by with it. We know that if Mr. Jones and Mr. A and Mr. B show up at the office on any given day, and they're slightly off, they're gruff, or they're inattentive, or they are disheveled or slovenly, and they're not usually, as long as that person doesn't go to too far of an extreme, we will tolerate that they're going to be different today. What if they really are different? What if there's a completely different aspect showing itself that doesn't do that very often? This particular person may not be as good at the job that he does, or as gracious, or any number of differences. And as long as it's not too wild, too wildly off base, we tolerate that up to a point.
Mm-hmm.
We get up in the morning every once in a while, and we even have phrases and language. This is a big clue as to things that go on, is what shows up in our language. You can get up and not be yourself. Isn't that a common phrase? Well, if you're not, who are you?
I notice sometimes that whole organizations have to evaluate what mood the boss is in when he comes in so that they can adjust their behavior to him.
I say it's a different boss.
Yeah, exactly.
That's my point. It might as well be, right?
Yes, it might as well be.
It might as well be. I mean, we act like it, so why not acknowledge it? It's a different boss. I am Samson 1 today. You're used to seeing Samson 2 and hanging out with him, and you like him better, but I'm Samson 1 today, or Samson 10 or 11 or 12 or however many there are. I boiled it down to that there really isn't too many physical Samsons. In fact, as far as I can tell, there's only one. But that Samson, that physical Samson, is affected by other forces and other factors and modifies
mm-hmm.
Samson's behavior and thoughts and feelings and memory according to varying outside influences. And I named the two. I used, in limiting it to two, the fact that we have so much of our universality talks about having a soul or a spirit, that we are, that we have a spiritual aspect and a spiritual component. I said, all right, maybe that's not just a fantasy. Maybe the fact that it shows up again and again and everywhere and every guise, all over the place, all over time. Let's say that it's true, that there is a non-physical component that we are also. Again, not saying that it's better or higher or at a different vibration or, yeah, now we're into interpretation.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say that for sure. But let's say that there's a physical being. I can attest to that because I just stubbed my toe and it hurt and I know that I'm here and here it is. This is my physical body. I can see it in the mirror. And there's a non-physical part that I don't know what to name. So I named it. I called it the body, the physical, and the baseline personality. And making it as clinical and as unromantic and as, you know, as unlofty and unspirit, because I didn't want to get caught up in the connotations that come with it. So I just named it a simple, fundamental thing, the baseline personality. And what makes it the baseline personality, not some other personality, not an aberration, not a multiple personality, not a split, all of which can be talked about, but the real one, the bottom line one, the baseline, is that the baseline personality and the body have an agreement to be together under some form of a contract designed to come together and explore the composite being that they became, and it is only that particular non-physical aspect joined with this particular physical body that forms the human being known as Samson Orion.
Now, the physical, because of its shape and particular genetics, whether you're a fast runner or a great singer, also has, don't you think, an effect on the baseline personality?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. Together is together. Coming together in a partnership is coming together in a partnership. You will influence each other, or you won't have any success at all.
Excellent.
And that's true in marriage, and that's true in friendship, and that's true in a business partnership, and that's true in a collaboration like you have in writing a book, and that's true in any form of cooperation. If you don't influence and affect one another, it will stale and die.
I see freeways full of people just like that. They are stale. They're going from day to day, from paycheck to paycheck, from family vacation to family vacation, and they are no different now than they were when I graduated with them in high school.
It's a sad thing. It's a waste of energy and effort. It's a terrible thing, but mostly it's a sad thing. It's an isolated, lonely thing. And the thing, I don't like to be that vague usually, but the thing that allows the body and the baseline, or the baseline personality, to know one another, which I call the interface, the communication thing. Without that communication going on, without the physical aspect knowing what the non-physical aspect is thinking or feeling, and vice versa, without all of that, we are lonely, isolated, desperate people, which describes perhaps the most talked about, written about, sung about, sculpted about, lamented about situation and state of humanity, is our isolation and our loneliness. And I say that comes strictly from not being able to know and communicate and talk to and explore, expand, dance, joy, revile, revel, and all of what we are, not just the fact that we have to get up and go to work and wash ourselves and hurry up and wait to die, because that's all that's waiting for us. That's a terrible story.
But how interesting it would be to have the boss come in one morning, gather the plant or his organization together and say, hey, I had the most amazing experience this morning. I showered. And then
then you could visit him in Bellevue.
Yeah, exactly right. This awakening or quickening, and that's really what this book is all about. It's a manual of quickening. This, so this call. culmination, as you say in your book, the culmination of the coming together through binding force of contract, each body acquiesces to engage symbiosis with a consciousness now to be called the baseline personality. I like that. I as a scientist, one of the hardest things to do in your abstract is to describe observations without ambiguity. And you have done that in your language of your book so well that it really gives a clear, unmistakable, unmisinterpretable idea of what this relationship is between the physical and the non-physical you. And I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
I'm going to read it again. I have another margin I can write in as I as I read it again. I wrote the first
time. The
best
way to have margins for that is to buy so many of them that you that you never run out of margins.
And that brings me to a good point. How can our listeners get a copy of this great book and start digesting it?
It is available online at the most common places, Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. You can go directly to the publisher, which is PublishAmerica, one word, .com. And I recommend that you look it up by my name, Samson Orion, not the title Manifest Zero, because there is a caricature that I use, not a, a character that I use, a slash zero in the title, and it is not easy to type in. So look for me, look for the book by my name, Samson Orion.
Okay, so put Samson Orion in as the author's name, and this book will come up. We will provide a link to it on our website at x2-radio.com as well. Let me throw in a couple of commercials here. We'll take a musical interlude and allow you to take care of whatever you need to get to the next hour. Have you been to the Discovery Store lately? If you go to X Squared Radio and click on the Discovery Store sign, you will be amazed at the prices they have on the world's best telescopes. Everyone is excited about star and planet watching. Did you know that most of the comets named in the past 50 years were found by amateurs? Listen, those big publicly funded telescopes have their time bought and paid for. They're not looking for anything new and dangerous. It's up to explorers like you. So go to the Discovery Store and get your telescope as soon as you can. Who knows? You might save the planet or find the next great comet. Visit the Discovery Store at X Squared Radio. We'll take a short musical interlude, give you about 45 seconds, and we'll be back. Welcome back, Earth Explorers. I know some of you don't enjoy my bumper music, but I enjoy it. It's energetic and has great power. The band is called Cell Dweller, and you can pick up the CD at celldweller.com. They are the band behind numerous musical soundtracks for very popular films that have been out in recent days. We'll go into a whole lot of that, but you need to go to celldweller.com and meet Mr. Clayton and his friends, and you'll be amazed at the talent and energy of these young men. And I appreciate them allowing me to use their music as bumper music. We're here tonight with Samson Orion, author of the book Manifest Zero. We have very carefully in the first hour laid down the groundwork, if you've stayed with us during the first hour, of the relationship, nay, the contract between the non-physical and the physical body, which he terms the baseline personality. And we have just opened the subject because we are about to delve into feelings and interpretations and inspirations that many of you have had and been unable to put into words, but Samson has been able to put them into words, and his words are available in his book, Manifest Zero. Welcome back.
Thank you.
All right. We are now the baseline personality. I think we understand that, and whether we're stubbing our toe or stopping to, quote, smell the roses and be amazed at something we have seen every single day and not paid any attention to, we are now open for inspiration and open for other interpretations. I also want to open the phone lines this hour. You can always call in toll-free. The number is 888-268-4313. That's 888-268-4313 anywhere in the United States. We'll be happy to take your questions for Samson Orion. So where do we go from here? What, now that we have defined that we are getting stimulus, information, from us, ourselves, as a symbiont to some greater consciousness, where do we go from here?
I'd have to say that the most universal of all questions that human beings have is, why are we here? What's the purpose? I think that it's not it's a very easily defensible argument that question has been the inspiration for all of religion and for all questing and all of the ideas that we have, thoughts, feelings, explanations, inspirations of an afterlife and so forth. I mean, what's our purpose?
I myself have asked that question many times, and I think I've seen a video, sort of a man on the street interview, and witnessed answers like, I have no idea, to I've been searching for the answer to that all my life.
The reason we're searching is because we don't know.
Or we forgot.
Fair enough. But in everyday immediacy, the effect is the same. We don't know what our purpose is, and we ask that question is because we can't answer that question.
If we knew the answer, would that change us?
If we have the answer, everything shifts into a completely higher gear. Now we have motivation that we never dreamed of. I mean, you know, there's purpose, there's flavor, there's reason, meaning, depth, excitement, fear, uncertainty, reluctance, but all of these things are much more flavorful. Certainly they're much more tantalizing than, oh man, I just don't know.
Yes, I understand.
So we become more alive. All of these things, even if they're not in every moment to each individual the most pleasant or the most uplifting, we are more alive. We're more alive when we're afraid. Certainly any soldier coming back from war will tell you that. So it doesn't have to be pleasant. It doesn't have to be all goodness. It doesn't have to be all or only lightness and love and everything in order to stimulate aliveness. We're alive. We're thinking. We're breathing. We can do things. We can imagine things. We can extend ourselves. We can get passionate about things. We can get cranked up. There's so many different ways to say it and so many avenues to explore it with. But what we can come down to is, yeah, but I really don't know what the reason is. Then it's easy to slip into, well, I guess I'll just have another beer.
Yeah.
And it is usually in that defeated, hopeless kind of tone that I just expressed it in that I hear that expression so often. Well, yeah, I guess I'll just have another beer, or I guess I'll just go to bed early because I got to get up, you know, tomorrow. I got to, an extra spreadsheet to work on. Or I mean, there's such hopelessness that I've heard throughout my life and my time, expressed in the mundane things that we feel that we have to do, that we are assigned to do, that we have no alternative but to do, that we don't know what else to do instead of, rather than knowing our purpose. But if, let's just say if the body and the baseline came together in order to do something and required communication between them, between the body and the baseline, in order to be in touch, and we can get into some of the specifics of that in a moment here, but if they needed to communicate in order to get all the preparation ready and all of the details worked out and to acclimate themselves to one another and get to know each other at the level that they would, because you said before, I don't think it's particularly fascinating to take a shower, but to a being, an entity that has never had a physical body, it might find every single aspect of that the most amazing thing in the world.
The neat thing is that here, tonight, right now, at whatever age the listener happens to be, you can become aware of this and not end up like the interviewee of, I was actually talking with Og Mandino, who's a very famous author, Augustine Mandino, and he was interviewing a woman who was ancient. I don't know, she was maybe over 100 years old, and after the normal questions like, to what do you attribute your long life and things, he asked her, if you had anything to do over again, you know, what would you do if you had life to live over again? And she said, well, my life had its moments, but if I had it to do over again, that's all I'd have, is moments, one after the other.
The next and the next and the next. There's not, we don't have to have a finality here. We, well, you know, my purpose is to build this monument, and then what?
I call it sandcastle. You finish the sandcastle, then what?
Yeah, then what?
Then we jump on it.
Yeah, no, destroy it. Build another one. Do something else. Paint it blue. Go have a soda. I mean, it's not over because the last kernel of sand is in place. But you have to know that there's a sandcastle to build. At least you're excited and motivated and moving in the course of building that. Most of us live out our lives without even knowing that we can build a sandcastle, or we should, or that we want to. But if the body, if the body and the baseline came together to explore each other and to do what a physical being and a non-physical being combined together, bringing the talents and attributes and the better qualities of both, and who knows what might even come in synergy? Who knows what might come when you blend the physical and a non-physical being? Maybe some of the possibilities, talents, attributes, and so forth haven't even been discovered yet. I mean, you know, there is exploration over here. If they came together in order to do something, and then stymied in doing that.
You've opened so much here about discovery, about exploration. I remember my mother had kept some very old newspapers, and one of them was, I think, dated 1959, and it said in there that Congress was making a motion to close the U.S. Patent Office because
everything had been discovered, right?
Everything had been discovered.
Wasn't that a principle in physics earlier in the century, where there was really no need to house new chairs in physics because there was nothing left to...
Yep, everything's been figured out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the interesting thing is that now what you have done is and we won't go into huge scientific discoveries that are left to be done, but what you've done is you've made life delicious again. It's sort of like, I don't know.
It needs to be.
Tasting
it needs
blueberry
to be.
Ice
cool.
cream for the first time.
It's cool to be in one of these bodies. It can be.
Yes.
I mean, it certainly can be. We don't, you know, again, as you say, we don't have to explore, oh, well, you know, I have arthritis, so it hurts to be in this body. Well, yeah. I mean, there's philosophical ways to interpret that, too. But just the overview of things is to get rid of the hopelessness and to get rid of the restlessness that we want to do something. We feel like there's more, but have no way to attach to it, have no way to... No direction to aim and to look towards it. But we feel there's more, that there's more complexity, there's more richness. There's just more. And we feel stuck. And what do we do next? And I would love to be able to answer, what do we do next? But the truth is that that's a very personal and individual answer to that question. What I want to do and what you want to do may or may not be the same. It will probably not be the same. But what we can all agree on universally, that the way to find the answer to that is to, it's not very glamorous, but you got to start listening to your baseline personality, and the baseline personality has to start listening to your body. We have to know who we are. We have to know what we are so that we at least have some acquaintanceship with the tool that we have in order to find purpose, motivation, goal, and activity to set, to put forth. I mean, that has to be it. And so in spite of the fact that I'm ready to go, I mean, my bags are packed and I want to go to other dimensions. I grew up on science fiction. I've been fantasizing about other worlds and other dimensions and alien races and this, that, and the other since I was 8 years old, since I was first starting to read my own self-chosen books out of the library. I know that not everybody is interested in that sort of thing. I know that they're everybody's goal.
They're not?
Well, it ought to be. I mean, and when I'm king, I can assure you that this will be the universal law. But until such time, no, I hate to break it to you, not everybody is interested in that, at least not to the degree that I am. But even though I'm ready to go, and if I had full ability, if I could travel in space, if I didn't need to breathe, if I was able to be immortal, and all the things that may or may not be able to happen to this body, those are the directions that I would go in. But and you would go someplace else, and this person would go someplace else yet. But before any of us does any of that kind of stuff, we've got to do some homework. We're behind. We're terribly behind, and exams
right.
are coming up.
So what do we need to study? What is the homework that that would be transferable or universal that each of us can do to try to get ourselves ready for this kind of interpretation? How do we flip the switch so that we can sense the differences in the background noise of life and try to see that although we're attached to time and our watch and whatever clock is in the lower right-hand screen of our computer, our spirits are somewhat detached from that, somewhat floating
right.
in between, and we can race ahead and fall behind or languish in between seconds for months at a time if we want. How do we do that?
We start with the most simple, undemonstrative thing of all. We start to notice. I really would love to present some great program, just eat certain foods and take certain herbs and exercise robustly and travel to a high altitude, but it has to be universal, Brooke. This has to be available to everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because the Aborigine does it, a Hopi Indian does it, and the rabbi does it, and the physicist does it, and the mathematician who has reached the end of all known math and reached out into the maelstrom of intelligence and pulled down some whole formula that dazzles the rest of the logical world, they do it.
Everybody has to be available to do it, or it's not, or you haven't gotten simple enough, and you haven't gotten universal enough. And you haven't gotten broad-based enough. This is for everybody. I'm not just talking about bright people. I'm not talking about privileged people. I'm talking about any human being at any state of being, even a child. This is a program where you have to listen and think and talk, but this can be intuited. This is not something that is held back from somebody that doesn't understand complex sentence structure or anything else like that. This is available to everybody. When you hear, you, not you, Brooke, but you, everyone out there, when one hears that I had a dream, and in the dream, here's something that was forecast, and I think this is a prediction of the future, or I saw my dead parent or a departed friend or something else like that, you do not benefit yourself by having it told back to you, oh, that's just a dream. That is a diminishment of who you are and what you are, and probably a denial of your baseline talking to you.
Well, I have to admit, I stopped telling those around me of my dreams a long time ago, just because of that.
I
still have them, and I relish them, And occasionally, someone who loves me, like my wife, who's sitting over there peacefully reading her novel, I will share one. And the reaction is amazing. Sometimes, you just thought of that? No, I've actually been having that thought for a long time, but I didn't want to share it with you. Something, I have to read this out of your book because I'm going to make a bumper sticker out of it from my office. It says, potentials and possibilities are visible and clearly known to some, and in parentheses you put, fluid beings of shimmering instability, as are the stars, a blanket of destination seen and known to you upon each of your halved revolutions called night.
It's pretty, but what size bumper do you have that you could put that?
Well, I like the part about fluid beings of shimmering instability. I'm going to have that put on a T-shirt. That's got to be a conversation starter right there, because I think that's really what we are. I mean,
yeah.
we're square beings being slammed into a round hole sometimes, but deep inside, we're all fluid beings of shimmering instability.
We are passion. We human beings are a passionate race. I know that usually that passion comes out in devastating, bloody ways, but passion nonetheless. And there are plenty
ballet,
of
it. I've heard it in concerts.
Everywhere. We love to do things that are moving. We like to move. We like to build. We like to create. And we like to tear apart, sometimes violently, and sometimes just tearing apart to see what's there, to see what's behind it, how it works. We are curious, inquisitive, moving, driving beings. And it is absurd that so many of us sit back and go, oh, gosh, I just wonder what to do today. I mean, it just doesn't, it's part of the inconsistencies that I see that grow out of being, half of you that's talking all the time, muffled and silent. So you start where we were, you start learning to catch yourself when you're shutting yourself up. It's not just a dream. It's at the very least, a dream, something to be acknowledged, something to accept and recognize, not diminish. Not, it's just a dream. That's just woman's intuition. So many of the little voices that we get in intuitions, in hunches, in dreams, in, gosh, I wonder where that thought came from. What do they call it? The aha insight.
Or haven't I been here before?
Yeah, deja vu. See, all of these things are communication. They are a language that one part of us is telling to another part of us by way of saying, notice this, or look what I just experienced. Here's a way for you to experience it, the physical talking to the non-physical or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
I just took this shower, and this is the way my skin felt. Of course, you don't have skin, and you don't have water, but I'll try to transmit a feeling, a sensation, an emotion, and a thought that I had about taking this shower. Take it in. I mean, you might feel like a fool standing there in the shower talking or thinking at someone that's inside of you that's also you, but it works the other way. We do get impressions and hints and clues and ideas and inspirations out of nowhere that are communication. We are talking to ourselves all the time, and mostly we are telling our voice that is talking to us to shut up or go away. Or that it's not real. We tell our children far too quickly that they're imaginary friends. Well, you can finish that thought in that sentence.
Sure.
Everybody knows that.
Well, I can't help but bring maybe this in. Some people that I have spoken to on this program and others, that they say that these influences, sometimes they're not us, sometimes they are other spiritual beings who, because we are so passionate and so interesting and so uniquely placed in the universe and in time and have unique abilities, we're interesting and we're attractive. And so there are other entities that vie for our attention and actually ask for well, I hesitate to use the word possession, but there are maybe past lives or other spirits who don't have a physical body that are competing against one another for our attention and for our permission to use us. Is that part of this as well?
I would say that it is as close as I can guarantee it. That's how strongly I'll go. It's guaranteed. Anything desirable is desirable. If it's desirable to one person, it would be arrogance to a degree that I can't even describe to think that you are so unique that you are the only being that might desire this. Something else, sooner or later, with all the uncounted trillions of and quadrillions of possibilities for life, for sentience, for consciousness, for nothing else to find the same thing appealing, not a chance. It has to be. And that's why I like the term baseline personality rather than any other personality or entity or form or consciousness that you might attribute. There's one that's connected to the body that has the authority and the say-so permission by contract to interact with this body. When you have others that are tapping in, you can have problems.
But you do have to exert what you call control.
You have to know, you have to be strong. You don't let anybody else into your house.
Well, you might to visit, but certainly you don't want them to come.
By invitation is something else.
Yeah.
By invitation is another category of having a visitor. But we have houses and we understand, I mean, some people defend that property differently from others, but we understand that inside this boundary that we have arbitrarily decided, call it a fence or a plat from the surveyor or the county granted by according to a tax base, whatever it is, that this is mine. And you are only welcome to enter this within this space with my permission.
And when I say it's time to leave, it's time to leave.
It's time to leave.
No means no.
And in the everyday world, we have ways to back that up. But since we are living in this world that I'm describing, this situation that I'm describing, where we have non-physical beings that not only can we not, generally speaking, see or hear or feel, but discredit when we do, when they do make themselves apparent, then we're poorly equipped with that kind of experience to have some different entity, some non-contractually binding entity come on in and say, well, get out of here. How would you back that up? Most of us would not even be aware that they were being so attached or so visited, and then you start thinking, oh, gosh, well, I wonder if some of the schizophrenics, if that would explain what schizophrenia is. Gosh, I wonder if that would explain what multiple personalities are. Gosh, I wonder if that would explain what possession is. God, I mean, we do have documented cases of people, beings, ordinary human beings that were one way for all of their lives, then all of a sudden began to act inexplicably and specifically as if some other intelligence were directing or guiding or forcing them to do things. We do have these kind of experiences. We just don't know how to explain them.
Do you think maybe some of the disappearances that we have, and we have documented somewhere around 500,000 disappearances every year all around the world, people that just walk out one day and never come back and maybe reappear somewhere else, living a different life, speaking a different voice and a different occupation?
I think that's very possible. I think it's very possible. I also think it's possible that you can phase out of this reality and phase back in. I'm willing to bet that you have put your car keys down when you've gotten home on the place where you always put them, if you're that type. I mean, a lot of us are that way.
I have a hook.
Okay. And then an hour later, you need to go out and the keys aren't there.
Well, I know why that happens. I call it time holes. I do this all the time.
Well, there's
keys on the book.
I'm betting that my idea is the same as yours, is that the reason you can't find your keys is not because you put them someplace else, because they're not there.
Well, they are when I come back later. That's where they are, right?
Hey, well, that's right. But they took
like
a little journey
shirt.
Without you and without the car.
Yeah.
We phase in and out. We can phase in and out. This is sorcery talk in I don't know how many different cultures. Castaneda talks about this all the time. And, you know, in going to the second and third dimensions, some of his mentors, some of his teachers, apprentices actually phased out of this reality, could not be seen, talked to, or felt from this place here as a base.
And then came back?
And then came back.
So, passing through walls or out of cells?
You're not passing through them. If you're passing through walls, you're staying in this particular reality and changing the structure of the physical structure of matter. But if there are more than one here, layered on top of one another, here number two may not have that wall. So you don't have to walk through that wall. It's not there to walk through.
My goodness. You know, in physics, one of the things that we are trying to get past is the observation effect. When we bombard something with photons to take a picture of it, in other words, we affect it. When we bombard it with electrons, with an electron microscope, we affect it. So we have, especially with digital technology now, we've become closer than ever to receive only observations so that the observation effect doesn't have so much effect. And one of the things that's been remarkable is when we chill down large molecules with large electron clouds down close to absolute zero, we expect to see the electrons slow down. We expect to maybe even see them going around their orbits in some non-Heisenbergian way. But what we really see at that point is that the electrons actually blink out and blink in another location in this probability of charge around this particular molecule.
Yeah, they're not moving along a line the way we understand linear movement.
Right. They're passing in and out of this dimension.
Effectively, it could be said that they cease to exist in this particular locus and renew their existence in a different locus, but have not, but since there was nothing there, there was no existence, there was really no passage, there was no distance crossed or time expended. They ceased to exist and began to exist, two separate events, two separate structures, two separate electrons. It just so happens that if you look at them like a movie, it looks like they're connected.
There
might be
no,
the same one, but it.
No small amount of physicists that are writing about this very thing. For lack of language, we've called it entangled particles, where we separate paired spin particles apart, and we, by electromagnetism, change the spin on one of those particles. The other reverses its spin instantaneously. In 1989, that was done 11 kilometers apart, and recently an experiment was crafted with 6 beryllium atoms where it was done on the other side of the planet in the space shuttle. So the theory is that we could remove those 6 beryllium atoms to the other side of the universe, change their spin, and the associated entangled particles here would reverse their spin instantaneously, even though separated by uncountable parsecs of distance. So that being said, on a particle level, it's probably the same on an energy level or a spirit level.
And if they are indeed two separate events.
They are indeed two separate events, but they are
then
so...
Then the distance doesn't matter because distance is not what we're talking about.
Precisely right. So... Now, we've opened a subject here that I hope we can get done. When we're talking about this, a different personality or a different spirit or a different particle popping in, I guess molecules don't really care which electron is orbiting around it, but we as human beings, as individuals, as baseline personalities, we should care, and we probably are empowered to care about who is inside our tabernacle.
We like to have our family close to us and everyone else less close.
Exactly. Well, you talk about a concept called quarantine in your book. So describe that a little bit.
I needed to find a way to explain why the body and the baseline can't speak to one another. I mean, it's and once again, I use for my evidence mythology, phrases of language that seem to show up and appear. I mean, I use all of these things as clues. I mean, they're here for a reason. I'm not a believer in accidents.
No, other people made the same observations and painted them or carved them
somehow.
And
when they show up again and again and again, I have to say there's a core truth to this story. And just because I may not like the imagery of it, or any part of the way that it's told, I hear this story over here told differently, but it's the same story. So I know that certainly I've read several books, and I know there's a lot more out there, and there's a lot of discussion, especially in the conspiracy theory people and the UFO theory people, that folks that like to explore along those lines. It's a pretty common tale that, or idea, that at some point in history, human beings were genetically manipulated by aliens, outside sources, and some sort, and that explains all kinds of behavior afterwards.
Well, there's a fair amount of physical evidence that that is in fact true.
There's a lot of physical evidence in that, and I'm presenting it lightly the way I am because I don't want to take a strong stand on this. I maintain that I personally believe that. Me personally, Samson believes that. But I also am aware of the fact that I may be interpreting that along ways that, you know, my system likes, or, you know, my science fiction background, or all this kind of stuff. I'm not hung up on the fact that this has to be the only way that this can happen. But this fits all this accounts for it. So I'm going to tell the story this way. Long ago, when human beings became human beings, by conjoining a body and a baseline personality under contract, we became this being that is passionate, that is motivated, that has strong command over energies and the ability to manipulate and move sensory matter, and we're just this really cool, exciting, vibrant life form. And it had all these ideas and all these plans, the body and the baseline, to get to know one another and then go off and find out just what this incredible machine, this incredible creation could do. The
community, on an incredible planet.
On an incredible planet, which I don't think was this one. But the device, the thing that was created at the time of the agreement, at the time of the contractual signing, to allow a physical, flesh-based, carbon atom-based being to interact with, exchange information with, and live with a non-physical being is called the interface. It's a translator.
Mm-hmm.
I take a shower and I feel that it's wet, and I feel that it's warm, and I feel that it's soothing, and I feel myself relax, and I sigh, and I notice the tension in my legs, and I say, oh, okay, just slow down, bend your knees a little bit. Hey, just taking a shower, and I soap up, and I like the scent of it, and I like the fact that I'm getting clean. Well, again, in here also is a non-physical being that doesn't have skin, doesn't know what water is, et cetera, on and on and on. What gives, how can that non-physical thing learn from my physical body taking a shower? There's a translator that takes my physical experiences, the thoughts that I have, the sensations that I do, the chemistry that gets altered inside my body, the differences in pulse and blood pressure and all of the various endocrine system and hormones and enzymes and whatnot that goes on, all that stuff, it translates it into its equivalent for that particular non-physical form. and vice versa. And on the vice versa part, what we get, what we know is we call those hunches, we call those intuitions, we call those the aha insights, things that we mentioned earlier in the program. Mm-hmm. So we're getting this flow back and forth, a language, a communication. Oh, this is how I saw that sunset. Oh, this is what it's like to be in love. Oh, this is what it's like to have a kiss. Oh, this is what it's like to feel bad. Ouch, this is what it's like to get cut. Transmitting these informations back and forth, back and forth. The physical experiencing what we all know physical beings experience and sending it to the baseline through the interface. And the non-physical having its experiences and sending it back to us through the interface in the form of dreams and insights and hunches and visions and prophecies and all the things that we know of that we call paranormal and supernatural, back and forth and back and forth. So here we have these beings on this wonderful planet just having a time getting to know one another when along comes an alien race far in advance scientifically and in many ways, and they look down and they observe these beings. They're newly discovered. They look down and they say, oh my goodness, look at these are amazing creatures, wonderful creatures, fantastic creatures. Look what they can do. Look what they're able to do. We need to benefit from this. We need to extract some of the good stuff from this and use it ourselves in our own race. Well, see, you can't really do that. You can't just go down and visit someone's home and you don't know them and say, well, listen, share your money with me. Give me your insights and how you operate. Let me experience what it's like to be with your wife. Let me experience what it's like to use your lawnmower. You can't do that. There's
not the lawnmower.
Especially the lawnmower. That's right. There's some things that are completely... your girlfriend maybe, but your lawnmower, that's really personal. Anyhow, these alien beings could not just go down and dissect something and say, let me see the source of your power, of your joy, of your happiness, of your abilities. Strong penalties for that, for imposing one's will on any other living being. So they took a chance. They were renegades, and they kidnapped them, took them off to some obscure place where no one would look, and decided with their genius, with their advanced science, with their advanced civilization, to find the biological, the physical basis for these creatures' abilities, and to, without harming them, and to extract the benefit of that and send them back home. They took a chance, and they messed up. They messed up because they didn't really get that the physical and non-physical were blended together in a very unique way. This is not necessarily a common way of existing. It's a curious blend.
You can't really pick that off the DNA, can you?
No, you can't get that off the DNA. The DNA doesn't show that kind of stuff. Just like in the Heisenberg, the uncertainty principle, the fact that you're observing an experiment having an effect is not that easy to find equipment to record that. We're not geared to do it that way. They muddled around, and they weren't finding what they wanted to find. Furthermore, their subjects, the early human beings, were starting to react weird. Human beings, I don't have to tell you, don't like being confined. They don't like being mucked with. They don't like being done to without their permission. We get really truculent. We get really...
Yes, we do.
We get nasty. And it was no different then, but the effects weren't abating. What had happened was, in muddling around, the interface, a non-physical construct, had gotten damaged. Now, the biggest source of distress for these creatures was the fact that all of a sudden, they weren't hearing themselves as well as they used to. They couldn't rely on getting information easily and availably about everything that was going on. They felt, this will be new for us humans, isolated, restless. There was more out there. They couldn't get at it. They were frustrated and acted it. Now
they regressed from their highly advanced state sort of like an ice cube being dropped into a glass of water, the temperature of the water dropped.
Yeah, not the ideal temperature at all environment for an ice cube to sustain itself. It became diminished. But the contract was still in effect. The motivation to become one out of these two disparate beings was still in effect. So some driving force, some desire to move forward, which we still have, all human beings still have it, was in place, but no way to implement it. Now, the alien race, the experimenters that I have called the overlords, because that's what they became. I picked this word to describe them. Now, the overlords were in trouble. Their experiment is screwed up. They didn't get what they wanted anyway, so they took this huge risk from the universal community of life and cooperation. I mean, they interfered with another life form. They did damage against someone else's will. They overpowered a riding existence, terrible crimes, and they didn't even get a benefit from it. Now they can't put them back. They're damaged.
Sort
it's
of a violation of the prime directive, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. So they had to stay. And that's the situation that we have today. Whether
so,
that story is the actual story or not, or whether it's another story that has a similar effect, that's what's in effect today. Here we are, unable to finish our contract, our purpose, to go and be what we are, expand who we are, and see where we can go further. Unable to do that, unable to hear the parts of ourselves that inspire us to do that and feed us the information to do that. We hear it, but it's garbled. The interface is not gone, it's just damaged.
Do you think maybe this interface is clearer to some than to others?
Absolutely.
And so, well, I heard it stated by another that in every generation, there are a handful of individuals who surface or don't surface in history that have the ability to comprehend almost everything. Certainly,
right.
Leonardo da Vinci or Einstein would be individuals like this. But you know what? At the end of Einstein's accomplishments, when asked, what would you do if you had to do it over again, he said, I would be a plumber. And I think the press kind of misunderstood that. What I interpret that to mean is that he was so ashamed at how his knowledge had been used terrible things had been done with his genius.
And it hurts to know all this stuff and have no one to talk to about it.
Yes.
And have nothing and have no way to access it. And if you see and if you can hear your interface, I mean, hear your baseline, if you really do have communications back and forth, and you don't live in and if you don't interpret it in such a way that you understand that that's what's happening, well, then you might call yourself a prophet and say that you are talking to God.
Right.
Any number of explanations can come about, but to put it together in such a way that you act to have the unimaginable talent or privilege to have interface be working and to hear yourself and to know yourself and to know that that's what's going on. And then to be, I don't know that it's happened. If it has, we don't know about it. Because I doubt that the purpose or goal of someone like that, someone with that kind of power flowing through them, somebody that can, in my case, feel their own hair grow so exciting just in each, is going to want to be a book publisher or be on Oprah. I really think that they're going to go off and do their thing and not really hang out with the rest of us, because I really don't know that there's anybody for them to talk to. This is not about sharing. This is about doing. The purpose of body and baseline coming together is not about sharing. It's about doing. And doing it in concert with others, absolutely. But it's about doing. It's not about talking about it. It's not about getting famous about it. It's not about knowing it and somebody else not knowing about it, or being a teacher or a counselor for doing. It's about doing. We're designed to do things. Human
yes,
beings
we are.
Like to do things.
So this is in contrast with other philosophies that believe that the way to peace and satisfaction is to actually empty oneself and to remove all trappings of the physical, either through fasting or special dieting or whatever, to disappear from this world, to withdraw from the physical. This is in opposition to that.
It's completely in opposition to that.
Exactly. So this quarantine that you're talking about, we're actually putting what in quarantine, and why are we in quarantine, and how do we, well, we're going to talk about how we come out here in a minute,
okay.
But describe that why we need to become aware that not only does the interface exist, but that some of us hear very well and some of us don't hear very well, but can be trained to hear better. How is this quarantine important?
It's important because the thing that I need to choose where I begin. Everybody can run. Not everybody can be an Olympic caliber runner, but everybody can run. And or even, I know that some of us are born without physical capability. You can pick any ability. You can get better at it with practice.
I can't jump.
Well, they say white men can't jump, so I don't know if...
I push as hard as I can. Every timing that I can experiment with, and I can get about 9 inches off the floor, that's it.
Yeah, well, I'm with you on that.
People 5 inches shorter than me can slam dunk the ball, and I can't get 6 or 9 inches.
Well, I don't know if jumping fits into my theory or not. But most things, save jumping, I'll leave that for debate. But most things, if we can do them at all, we can get a little bit better at it. And some people are just naturally talented. Some people, in the case with the interface, some people are born, and the damage to their particular interface, their inheritable damage to their interface, is not as severe, or maybe it's not at all. And a lot of times we get great stories about that. But the quarantine part, the thing that isolates us, first there's a physical quarantine. To a fashion. Again, if the overlord story and the genetic alteration and damage to the early human beings is correct, they needed to really be sure that not too many people found us here, not too many species or races came along and find us here, because if their crime against another life form were discovered, there's heavy tolls to pay. So there's that isolation, that form of quarantine. And the other is, what happens when you are thrown, forced into a situation to consort with, hang around with, be around a group of beings that has brought you pain and discomfort, robbed you of your, just think of if these overlords had to stay here, they too had to give up their families, their civilization, to hang out with these creatures that, even though it was their own fault, had brought them nothing but harm, nothing but dismay. Pretty much, you start to dislike one another. You start to take advantage of one another. And what evolved is overlords were originally drawn to the capabilities that the human form in its symbiotic dual form was able to produce.
Sure.
Mass uses of energy, mass expulsions of emotion and passion, in short, a really interesting, tasty group. Well, they found that there's something even stronger than the general run-of-the-mill, everyday set of vibrations, energies, exhalations that these creatures could put out, and that is put them under distress, annoy them, hurt them, confine them, and you will find strength of emotion rages, truculence, revenge, hatred, loathing, you will find
the stuff of great movies.
Emanations so strong, so much stronger that if you were drawn to emanations to begin with,
What do you mean by drawn to emanations?
If this alien species that found us and was drawn to the qualities and attributes the human beings had, they were drawn to what the human form could put out to begin with. Now, if you subject them to discomfort, to dismay, to imprisonment, they'll put out 10 times more emanations, stronger than the everyday emanations. They may not be very pretty ones, but let's say that these aliens, these overalls, aren't interpreting these things as pretty or happy or not. They're just going on richness. If you want richness, annoy some human beings, and you'll get richness of emotion like you can't. In short, we became very tasty.
So beyond entertainment, we were actually sustenance.
We became dinner.
How about that?
Or dessert, maybe. But now, generations pass, eons pass, millennia pass, ages pass, and that's the status quo. We feed them. They eat it. The quarantine, they see the human beings evolve. We get science, we get agriculture, we get civilization. Maybe we've done that several times. Maybe there is a Lemuria. Maybe there is a Mu. Maybe there is an Atlantis, where we human beings have evolved into fabulous civilizations many, many times. But you can't get too far. You can't let these beings off this rock. Because first, the overlord calumny may be discovered, and B, their dinner ticket will leave. The farmer can really not just leave the gate open and say, cows, go do whatever you want.
So we build and we plan and we do as we are by nature empowered to do until we crescendo. As soon as we're ready to leave the planet and go out into the universe where we can display our skills. And
we have to be taken down. The gate has to close.
Mm.
And the quarantine extends beyond the physical because everything in my ideas and my explanations and in my theories and in my writings involve more than just the physical. So if the physical gate has to close, then the non-physical gate has to close. Which means that every time that we get ready to leave the planet metaphorically, in short, every time we get ready to leave spiritually, any time we get too expansive, we get shut down. And all you need to do to show the truth of that is step outside your home, and you can stand on the corner and preach the Bible all you want to. But if you preach spirituality, you're going to be locked up. You'll be hurt, you'll be killed, crucified, any number of ways, but you will be shut down. We won't hear it.
Many people do not know the difference between being religious and being spiritual. I describe it this way. Religious people are afraid of going to hell. They've been taught to fear hell. Spiritual people have been there. We can see the difference between despair and hopelessness and hope and inspiration and limitless progression. And you're right. You're absolutely right. I can think of a couple of good examples. One everybody knows is Jesus, and the other one, it could be Gandhi or it could be Joseph Smith, who taught things of that nature and were literally hunted down and killed.
Absolutely. It's not, I mean, we see it very often. The stories they get recorded that we know of just on the tip of our tongue, the ones that you mentioned, are often religious stories. But it can be reduced to something that is not, that doesn't raise so many hackles. It doesn't make people be so defensive. We don't have to talk about religion. It's
Galileo.
That's right. It's freedom. If you express too much freedom, someone will step up to show you that you're out of line.
They'll strap a bomb to themselves.
They'll
and
do
walk
something,
into the
but you're not
party.
Going to be too free around me. And the reason for that is simply genetic programming. That's what the overlords were able to do. That's where their skill was in genetic manipulation. That was their starting point. If a system, if a being, a form, a human being begins to express itself too outwardly, energetically, programming will kick in to crowd around and diminish that expansion.
30 seconds. Well, I see. And we've just scratched the surface. We have one more hour tonight. We're going to talk about the concept of reentry, and you've heard the term think outside the box. Well, you're about to hear and learn more about the term box than you can imagine. This book is absolutely incredible, Manifest Zero. You can purchase it at, of course, Amazon and Barnes & Noble online, and we will have a link to it on our website at X Squared Radio. I'm going to have a short commercial. We'll take a little musical interlude and take care of some things, and we'll be back. Are you interested in stuff for your space? Well, I just bought a leather hand-tooled map of Europe, 21st century Europe, for my office. It hangs on the wall. It's about 30 inches square and has beautiful wood rods holding its shape. It looks awesome next to my Egyptian papyrus paintings. And they're on sale right now if you click the Novica link at X Squared Radio. In cooperation with National Geographic, you can find some of the best art and sculptures, replicas, at very good prices by visiting Novica at X Squared Radio. Also, have you bought inkjet cartridges lately for your printer? Wow. I paid about $80 to replace the color and black cartridges at a national retail store. Well, no more. Now I do all my inkjet shopping at 123 Inkjets. I bought a color cartridge for my HP 960C for less than $20. Got free shipping, and I got a chance at winning a free printer. Forget about those high prices for inkjet cartridges. Click on the 123 Inkjet sign at X Squared Radio and start saving money. Don't forget to check out their other printer supplies. 123 Inkjets at X Squared Radio. And we'll take a short musical interlude, and we'll be back in about 45 seconds. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. We have as our guest tonight, if you've been tuned in to our program tonight, Samson Orion, the author of Manifest Zero. Of course, you can pick up this great book at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Not very expensive, I guess, less than $20. It has nice wide margins, and I have been writing proliferously through my copy for the last couple of weeks, and we have just scratched the surface the last couple of hours. We're in our final hour, and we're going to talk about a couple of concepts that many of you have heard the words before, but you really haven't digested the meaning of these words until you've heard my guest talk about them. And we're going to talk about reentry. It's a concept that, I guess, as we become rational beings, as we, you know, grow through childhood and and grow up as kids and through puberty and high school, we are hammered and formed and conformed, and And like you said before in our first hour, oh, that's only a dream. Forget about that. And now we're at this point where we're ready for re-entry, where we're figuring out that we are, in fact, eternal beings having a mortal experience through this contract relationship between the baseline personality and the spirit or the body. And in ancient writings, there is a concept called to go no more out. It sort of means that you will continue to leave heaven and go back and have more and more and more experiences until you are a complete being. And when you have finished all of that, then you will return and become, some prophets call it, a pillar of heaven, and you will go no more out. You'll be finished with mortal experiences. You will have learned what you needed to learn. And in your book, I kind of pulled a little bit out of that. So let's talk about re-entry, and then we'll talk about the box.
Okay. I named the chapter re-entry. It really is stating what is, what status. I mean, if you just reduce everything down, what's going on over here? Here being in the United States, in a human body, on the earth, 20th century now, what's going on? What seems to be the consensus reality is that you, as a human being, you will be born, you'll spend a few short years on the planet's surface, and then you will, either through disease or just by virtue of time, decline, decay, and die.
And don't forget taxes.
I don't forget taxes. I'm an American. And the last thing that I want to do is forget taxes. That's pretty much it. This is a very, this is a very limited scope kind of a scenario over here. This is, in many ways, the people that are hedonists that just say, well, really, what difference does it make? What I do if we all end up in the same place? I mean, they're really right. We can aspire to do great things and great deeds, and we can be altruistic and philanthropic to help others and do all this sort of stuff. But if we just have a few short years to be here, to grow up, gain our maturity, gain whatever faculties we have, develop them either physical or mental or in combinations of both, and just spend them for a few short years before we just start to decline, and then all we can do is die. This is a, then I don't see that it does matter what you do. The overlord programming, the type of thing that keeps us limited, is so strong and so pervasive that we have accepted it. Most people that I have known in my life and speak to don't even know that this is something to be questioned. This is as good as it gets. You squeeze out, eke out a few short years, try to have a little fun, maybe do a few good deeds, or aspire to some fame, or do something, climb a mountain, and that's it. That's all you get. What is that we are being fed upon all the time, all of these emotions and sensations that we have, all our outrages and our spewings and our desires and our dreams that we're frustrated about, the things that elevate our blood pressure, the things that make us feel alive, even though not always happily alive, are being picked up like a radio signal and fed upon, and that happens until we just give up the ghost, until we're just too tired to do anything else, and we lay down and die. And we lay down and die, the only reason we lay down and die, because my evidence seems to indicate that these bodies aren't really designed to just lay down and die. They're designed, if not immortal, then they're designed to be around for a long, long time. But that is a wholly functioning, fully operational unit. Any machine will wear down, any car engine will wear down a lot quicker if you just don't put oil in it or don't tend to it in some way. The machine requires basic maintenance. And the basic maintenance that we have as human beings is not just showering and eating. We know that there are emotional fulfillments that we must have. There is human contact that we must have, or no baby makes it. Babies don't make it on their own. They make it on human contact with their parents and with their grandparents and with loved ones and with community. We have needs and we have to be fed in order to keep these machines, these bodies working well. And one of them, the primary one, the first and foremost one, is to be aware of all of our parts. It's not enough that you are aware of your arms and your legs and you keep them from harm and put band-aids on them if they are cut or repair their bones if they are broken. It is the baseline personality, the non-physical part, that also has to be attended to and in attendance with at all times. And without that, we are so isolated. We are so bereft of a major component that we need equally as much to food or air or companionship, so much so that after a few short years, a brief little blink of time, 70, whereas even biblically we know that there are 700-year lives, 900-year lives, I mean, it used to be different. Without this basic sustenance, and every emanation being drawn off, sucked out of us, and used for some kind of aperitif somewhere, at some point we get so dismayed, so hopeless, that we just at some level say, you know, I just can't do it anymore. We call that age, and we go into decline, slow decay, fast decay. It really doesn't matter, and at some point just die.
No retirement home for me. And I tell my wife almost every day that I love her more than air.
There's things greater than air to love.
Yes.
It's high on the list, and I don't want to downplay it. But it is not primary. Primary is no one thing. Somebody that is hungry is not satisfied with getting more water. Somebody that is thirsty is not satisfied with getting more attention. Somebody that is lonely is not satisfied by getting more food. We have several requirements, numerous requirements, and all of them have to be catered to. All of them have to be nurtured and embraced and plentiful enough before we can say, okay, now I can do something. You take away the basic needs, and all you can think of is that basic need. I don't care how exciting the stuff is that's going on that you're doing and how involved and how much of a dream come true. If you're thirsty, all you can think about is being thirsty.
And so when all of those basic needs are met and the body has the maintenance that it needs, then what is the capability of the human being?
We don't know. We haven't got close.
It's unlimited, isn't it?
It's unlimited, and probably, I don't know if it's unimaginable, but it is not the type of imagination that we are really allowed to have, because if you start imagining that too much, you'll find that you're going to have to be explaining yourself to your local psychiatrist.
Do you think there are beings on our planet now, humans, that are beyond the normal lifespan, that have received not only these things, but they've exploited the contract of the baseline personality and figured it out?
Yes, I do, just because statistically it would have to happen. But I'm not there myself, but I know this. If I was there or getting there, the last thing in the world that I would let it be known is that I was doing that, because
yes,
I figure
exactly
I'd
right.
find myself on some government dissection table somewhere.
Like Duncan MacLeod.
I don't know who Duncan MacLeod is.
Oh, he was the immortal in a series called The Highlander.
Oh. See, if you don't have a television, you miss out on all this cool stuff.
Yeah. Well, it was an interesting story, and genetic chance created a group of individuals that were immortal, and they could actually suffer death by his sword and heal themselves and come back. And so he had lived
Sounds great.
Somewhere around 1,000 years, and His goal, though, was to achieve mortality and to be fruitful and have children, which he couldn't do as an immortal.
I see.
So,
but it's the same story. It's freedom that is attacked more than anything else. And if that freedom is mental or emotional, energetic or spiritual, psychological, or you name the way, if you exhibit too much of it or crave it too much, you'll attract attention.
Yes.
And often unhappy attention. But yes, I do believe that there are people out there, again, just statistically, if nothing else, and I have high hopes for that there is something else beyond that, but just by the fact that there are so many of us that have either been born with or have achieved, attained, figured out, gone for, sought, strived, and grabbed an understanding which has led to practice and a discipline to maintain that practice of implementing balance within the system, which means being aware of everything, not denying or denigrating or diminishing anything, listening to everything, listening to your body, what you want to eat, what you want to drink, what you should do, what you should think, how you react, how you interact, how you interpret, balancing all of these out and blending, and all of a sudden finds that the bald spot on his head, which I still have, is filling in. Because the system has entered into a more regenerative stage. It's starting to restore the original DNA, RNA imprint.
Mm. And, of course, if you reach that, it would be so coveted by those who could not attain that, that they would seek to take it or remove yours.
Exactly like the overlords.
Mm.
The system shows itself again and again and again. If we see something that somebody else has and we can't have it, if we are isolated, we take them. If we are not isolated, if we can communicate within ourselves, if we can figure out what they're doing, when I'm having a good time and I see somebody else having a good time, I don't want their good time. I'm excited for them to have a good time.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's because I'm full.
Right.
I don't feel in lack at that point. I don't feel threatened by their good time. Even if they're having a better time than I am having or have more of whatever it is, that I don't want theirs. I just say, oh, great, I can have more. There's more. I mean,
it inspires me. There is hope for one such as I. If they can do it, I can do it.
Yeah. Instead of, well, damn it, I'm just going to get his. It doesn't have to be, but the desire, the coveting, and the biblical injunctions against coveting and all of that come from an acknowledgement that we are empty.
We're isolated,
not...
Exactly. I have once or twice wondered what level of despair or isolation a human being would have to reach to be motivated to strapping an explosive device to your body and marching into someone's pizza party and ending them and you. I can't comprehend that.
The programming is clear. They're getting theirs. It's not so much that they hate children at a birthday party or that they hate diners at a cafe. They're getting a reward for doing that. Isn't it true that if you are die in the service of your God, then you know, all kinds of neat things happen to you? And in some philosophies and some religious beliefs, it's twisted. Lots of stuff that we have in all that we see in all religions is twisted. If you read the original Bible, whether it's Quran or Pentateuch or Bhagavad Gita's or any of the world's major religions or the smaller ones, you find that if you just look at what's written, they're not that far apart. You go a few thousand years down the road and see how it's been interpreted. You see how the clerics have implemented it, and you get a completely different religion.
Mm-hmm. All right. Do I truly know what box means?
It's a tough one. Conceptually, you're programmed from knowing it, and the language doesn't provide a clear way to explain it, just like I mentioned earlier in the program, that we really don't have a definition for health. So we talk about it, and we address it, and we think that we deal with it, but we don't even really know exactly what we're dealing with because we can't define it. Meaning we can't put it into language, which means we can't think about it in a succinct way that we can, as we can with other words.
Well, is the goal to just define the box, enlarge the box, or get out of it altogether?
Well, the idea is to get out of it altogether, but first you have to know what it is that you're trying to get out of and where it is and how can you realize it, how can you feel it, how can you sense it. A box is, the box that we live in is a reality. Talking about reality, wild stuff talking about reality. What is real?
This is the place to talk about it, though.
This is the place to talk about it, so let's talk about it some. Everything that you see, when you look around you, you see stars and you see planets that don't twinkle at night and trees, and there's a sensorium that we live in, with things that bring about our sensations. There's wind and air and sounds of birds and construction noises and the memories that we had yesterday and the pizza, the extra slice of pizza that we ate that we shouldn't have eaten that we still feel. I mean, there's so many things going on, and all of this is part of this reality. When you start taking that apart, when you start asking questions like, what is real? Now you're starting to explore that reality. You're starting to look for this box. You're starting to look for the edges of that box. Where does this particular reality begin, and where does another end? And what is an example of another reality? Well, a dream is an example of another reality. So here you are. You've just had a pleasant rest. You've been in your bed for several hours, and you had this fantastic dream. And it was, name any story that you want. Well, the typical Jungian sort of stuff. You saw white horses, and they were beautiful, and they were crossing over water. And, I mean, just every, classic image that you want.
I can swim underwater for hours without...
Or fly. Or,
I love the dreams where I'm flying.
And anyway, so there it is. And you wake up the next day. And, of course, by the time you've shared breakfast with your wife, most of us have convinced ourselves that it was just a dream. But what if it's not just a dream? What if it's not only meaningful? What if it is not only a communication of the baseline and body together? What if it's a place? What if, like your keys that disappear and reappear elsewhere, or that electron that's circling around its nucleus that doesn't go along this line but blinks out of existence in this location and blinks into existence again at another location, maybe the same electron, maybe not. What if this dream is actually a place, another place that has rules, another place that has trees or not, another place where gravity doesn't work so we can fly, another place where the water is oxygenated so you can swim underwater forever, forever. What if there's a completely different set of physics there? What if, but mostly, what if that real place? Now you have kind of a confounding thing to bring back here with you into this box, because if that dream place is a real place, an absolute place, real in every sense that this place is real, the rules may be different, but its reality is not questioned. You know, if you go to another country, if you go to a foreign land that has a different culture and a different language, you may not understand anything that's being said in the street, and you may not be able to appreciate how the people are speaking to each other or interacting. You may see them do what in America would be crazy things with one another that is just typical and normal over there, but you wouldn't deny that this is a real place. A different place. Different rules.
Right.
A dream is a different place in that sense. I don't know all the rules to it, but I know I can fly there. I know time doesn't work the same way there. I know that I have intuitions and knowledge, and I can know all kinds of stuff, and I don't learn stuff there the same way that I have to learn stuff here. You know that you can fly. You know you can swim underwater for long. I mean, there's just different rules there. It's as real as this place here, and it's a different box.
I'm glad it is. It's a delightful place sometimes.
Sometimes it is, but it's always a real place. Mm-hmm. We can sense it. Our bodies react to it. We're changed by it, perhaps momentarily and perhaps long-term, but we are changed by it. If we're changed by it, then we have interacted with it. If we have interacted with it, then we have been someplace that I call real. If we're interacting with it, then why diminish it? Why say that it's less than real? It is real. It's had a real effect.
Yes, it did. And it provides people maybe heightened or improved or, oh gosh, I'm trying to find the right word. You can see things or sense things in that ethereal world that you can't see or sense here.
Right. The rules are different.
Right. Now, but as you say, there's a side to a box that's between that reality and this reality. And now we're going to try to discuss how to get out of that box, how to maybe not even recognize that the side of the box is there, so that the dream world and the physical world that we're in intelligently and without any undue psychosis, we use both worlds to grow.
Earlier in the program, I described some of the state of being that I was in for a long time, that I wrote the book in that state and just existed in that state for a long period of time. And I suspect that not everybody's been with us the whole time, but briefly, very briefly, I was in a state where I was able to superimpose one set of views and perceptions on top of another set of views and perceptions, seemingly different, but they were happening simultaneously, concurrently. So I was, as I am right now, sitting at my desk, speaking into this telephone and communicating with you, and I could feel that. I know with the clothes that I'm wearing and how that feels and the temperature of the room and my hand gestures, because I talk with my hands and I'm looking at my desk lamp and the things that one might expect. But at the same time, while that was going on, these are the common things. I was also viewing this lamp and this chair and how my pants fit and the color of my shoes and whatnot, as if I had never seen them before. They were so fascinating, so interesting, and my interpretation of those things was that of a set of eyes and a mind that had not seen them 1,000 times before. Both overlapped. Realities are here. Boxes are layered upon layered within one another, like cards shuffled together in many ways, or even maybe like a piece of material, a cloth. If you look closely at the threads, they're cross-stitched. They go in and out under one another and cross-weave in all kinds of directions in order to form this seemingly integrated single piece of material. But in reality, it's hundreds of different threads, all occupying the same plane of existence. And at the level that we can perceive it at, because human beings are designed to see primarily in a very narrow band of visible light. We're designed to live within a very narrow band of temperature ranges. The human form, we know where, within that perceptive bubble, that perceptive sphere that we can recognize from our human status, there are lots of realities interwoven just like that cloth, but we're not geared to see them. We're not looking for them. A lot of them are really quite available, like dreams and stuff, and we spend our time talking ourselves out of the fact that they have any value or any reality whatsoever. Some of them are more subtle.
So the boxes are there.
The boxes are there.
It's not that the boxes are ever going to disappear, but maybe the concept is that the box has got an open top and we can move from one to the other by just floating over the top edge.
Coming up with an analogy is a tough one in this. Part of the what I call breaking the box or undoing the box is being so overly cautious about what kind of an analogy we place on it, because let's just use the one that you just employed.
It creates a box.
You've just limited the imagination of how to get out of the box. And I, first of all, calling it a box limits it in some way, because now I am envisioning a square thing or a rectangular thing or a container of some sort. It may not have any kind of an idea like that at all. You said, okay, maybe we can float out of the top or see beyond it. Okay, now we're moving in a direction and time. I don't mean to dilute everything that's said. I don't mean to give the impression that everything is amorphous and undefined and undefinable, because I know we're talking to people that are, you know, listening in that are maybe hearing some of these ideas for the first time. But I do want to stress the importance of the fact that every single way that we give a shape to something and say that's it, that's how we're going to think about it, that's how we're going to view it, that's how we're going to understand it, that's how we're going to approach it, that's how we're going to explore it, shapes it. It gives it a shape. It gives it a dimension. It gives it a limitation.
And the observation effect.
The observation effect. And if we adhere to that observation effect, then we can't do anything. The very solution to the problem that we're trying to find, or the avenue of exit that we're looking for, may have been eliminated by the image that we placed on it to begin with. Innocently, just by naivete, by ignorance, by not knowing it. So I have to caution, I feel responsible to caution, that we're using words and language and ideas and trying to convey them. And this is radio, this is, you know, sound, this is the way it's done on this particular medium. But even so, these words, I just have to throw in the caution that be aware of the fact that you hear something and you get an idea and you haven't heard it before, and it's great and it's new and it expands you and it limits you at the same time.
Mm. So the actual description might be a musical sound or an ode.
Absolutely. Well said. It doesn't have to be a box at all.
Mm.
But we operate in a plane of, in a sphere of assumptions. We assume that the house that we left in the morning to go to work will be there when we come back. We assume that it will look the same. We assume that that the bricks will be the same color. We assume many, many, many things, a lot of which we oftentimes get caught in the fact that our predictions of what will go on, because we've assumed the continuity will not exist. The people down in New Orleans, the people down in Biloxi, the Katrina, all those people that have been affected so profoundly, would understand if they didn't have more immediate things to, that the very ground that they walk on is not necessarily contiguous from day to day.
Yes, that's exactly right. But so with this lack of, I don't want to say lack, with this change of structure, or the description of structure, comes what you call in your book, it will appear to the outside eye that you are unstable. And then you talk about a thing, I circled it actually, you call it a rate of change that, a measure of heightened capacity in your body baseline system is termed blink speed. What is blink speed?
Oh boy, blink speed is a great concept. You wake up one morning and you don't feel like yourself. We've talked about that. There's language for that. There's phrases for that. We think along that line. The boss comes in. He's acting odd. He's more gracious. He's more generous. He's less generous. He's a different person. We have different, you mentioned earlier that if we are so neat, if we have such capabilities, these beings, these bodies, these minds that we are, this composite that we are, isn't it likely that there are other entities out there that are desirous having something to do with such a neat system, with such a neat machine? Maybe there are possessions. Maybe these are, yes. Blink speed is the allowance of these outside agents, these outside entities, these various personalities and personas, and you can call them whatever you will, from demons to divine inspirations and visitations. But whatever it is, the blink speed is the inviting of these outside entities to enter and be present in your form, to extract from them whatever information or experiences or sensation that they have, and allow them the same access to our
spiritual bartering.
Absolutely. This, however, is only safe if you know, you the individual, the knows who they are and what they are so profoundly that, as we spoke before, when you ask this guest to leave, you have the authority to back it up.
Mm.
The actual term blink speed is that if you are a type, there are several types that deal with, there are types of personalities, there are types, some people are skinny naturally, some people are thicker naturally, some people are stronger. I mean, we have different energetic shapes and different energetic configurations and patterns as well. For those that can do it this way, inviting entity after entity in, allowing them to go in faster and faster and faster, have them come in, feel them, extract their knowledge, exchange and barter in that way, and another one comes in, and the first one leaves, and another one comes in, and the second one leaves, and the third one comes in, and another one. That's the blink speed. You can get it so fast that it begins to be like a movie.
Huh.
You don't
sort of like the Matrix when Trinity needed to know how to fly a helicopter. They just downloaded the information.
They just downloaded
it.
Yeah, but click, 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 click. She learned to fly that copter in 2 seconds.
You know, I think I've experienced that very thing. In business, there's, for people that want to survive in the consulting business, we have a term called fake it till you make it.
Mm-hmm.
When someone in the company says, do you know how to use AutoCAD? Oh, of course I do. No problem. And then you sit down and you've never seen AutoCAD before in your life, but somehow this this knowledge enters you.
You've just been downloaded.
Within 2 or 3 hours, you're a master at it.
Yeah, you've just been downloaded.
Yes.
You can get the blink speed up so high that, but again, it's for people that know who they are. Their connection between body and baseline is profound and strong. And honored, even though interface may not be completely, you can't just sit around and wait to be perfect before you do the next thing. I mean, most of the time we're doing stuff half-cock, we're learning as we go, and that applies to this as well, and important to hear. So you don't have to.
Well, the concept perfect, especially in scriptures, as translated into English, is all incorrect. The concept actually should be termed complete, not perfect.
Yeah, yeah. I like that.
If you're a complete being, a complete personality, then like you say, you have command over your turf, and you can invite and eject anyone from it at any given moment. Then there can be this agreement, this temporary occupying or visitation, shall we say, not an occupying, where you come in and they get to experience something direct from your physical senses, and you get their technology as well.
Right. It's a beautiful swap, a beautiful barter. And the rate can get high. Again, every person, you can run the 100 meters in 14 seconds. I can run it in 16 seconds. This guy can run it in 9 seconds. But we can all run it. So the blink speed will change for everybody, their actual rate. But it gets so seamless. One's coming in while another is leaving. But you're strong in who you are and what you are and know what and how to hold that, so much so that what the outside observer sees is that, oh, well, there's Samson. And, God, you just ask him anything and he knows it. They just see Samson. They don't see a torrent of personality changes, different feelings, different sensations, in and out of different realities, because some of these entities are going to come through, they're going to be there, going to tell me information, maybe I'll see things, maybe I'll see into where they live, maybe I'll sense things, maybe I'll hear a sound. I mean, I don't know, I can't even begin to give all the possibilities of what might be. Just think of the range of perceptions and sensations that you have in your own body. There's lots of them. They could come any number of ways.
Well, you think about maybe how many years a person can spend in a classroom learning from one teacher and then another and then another. If they have endless resources and actually never have to produce anything, they're a professional student and they become master of multiple philosophies. You can only do so much in one lifetime, and then you're not productive in anything. You're just consuming knowledge and not really being productive with it, kind of like a professor would be. Generally useless in the real world, but
yeah, the classic ivory tower.
So. Yeah, with this way of learning, you're actually, you've accelerated everything. You now
accelerated
have,
and compacted.
Yeah, you have
the same
ability
amount of time
to,
is producing many more stimuli than you would just on your own.
Right. And instead of living or experiencing from class period to class period or final exam to final exam, you're experiencing moment to moment. And if you're quickened enough and can get your blink speed high enough, you don't just have one at a time that you're learning from. You have thousands at a time. And sort of like having a very fast internet connection, who needs their own hard drive? You've got access to all the
right.
knowledge in the world.
Right. Storage all of a sudden becomes a meaningless concept. You're
right.
living inside the storage.
I mean, I know where to get it.
I'm in it. It's here. Reach out. It's like air. You don't have to allocate where your air is coming from tomorrow. Just breathe.
Right. Absolutely fascinating. So, now we have really... crossed a lot of territory here, and I sense that we have crossed into what other people's boxes, I guess, other people's definitions of what this reality might be. And the interesting thing is reading biographies of certain mathematicians, you see that they have a spiritual experience, write down whole theorems without all the proof, and then it takes mathematical generations to catch up with where that formula came from. What you have done is independently experienced this, and you have been gracious enough to put it into print so that we can read it, and you've been great in coming on the program and talking about it so that we can hear it and listen about it. And I sense that in 3 hours, nobody is going to be able to grasp what's taken me over 2 weeks to go through this book. And I'm going to read it again and try some of the exercises some more. And speaking of exercises, in the back of the book from, oh gosh, I guess about page 150 to the end of the book, it's, let's see here, it's about 240 pages. There are things that we can do to And things that we have to recognize. You call them else and parable, and you actually, you know, use those words as nouns, as personalities in your book. And I encourage people to buy the book and read it and understand these concepts. But what can we do as people that are sort of locked into the payday to payday or the church to church world, and start filling in all of this so that in a mere 100 years we can live 1,000 years worth of life?
I recommend that we do what's most available to us even while we're driving, even while we're having dinner, even at a break at work, just everyday stuff. Don't worry too much about setting yourself with a regimen and a program that you have to go out and buy equipment for or set aside time for or anything else like that. Don't forget, this is like the air in the atmosphere around us. You don't have to seek it out. Just breathe. There's air there. How do I apply that to what you asked me? What I would recommend is that we start by noticing what goes on around us. Reality defines itself mostly not by what it is, but by what we have eliminated. We have eliminated many, many things. We have reduced all of existence and all of oneness into the shape of this reality. Not because of what it is primarily, but for what we have not allowed, what we don't see, whether it's outside of our physical capabilities to see it or sensations to sense it, but also out of our concepts that we don't want to look at it or are not accustomed to it or don't grow up with it. So I recommend that you start by noticing what people are saying around you. Not eavesdropping, just listening to the conversation that floats around in the office, in the background, at work, at play, at home, your kids, what's on the radio. Listen to it and see if you can find patterns in that that are, example, you're thinking about getting a new vacation home. You've come into a little bit of money and you, have a windfall and you're something you've always wanted to do. You wanted to live near the beach, and you're going to get a, you know, a small little thing for you and your family. You're going to have a small place down by the beach. And just at that time, you hear a real estate announcement for Florida land come on the radio. Is that a coincidence?
Probably not.
I'd say not.
It's a sign.
In some realities where everything is connected, in the universal oneness that we all talk about, everything is part of everything else. So why wouldn't it be that if any of that part is true, let's take it into this physical realm? You're talking about looking for a place to live. You're looking to, you do this vacation home thing, something that sounds very mundane and bourgeois and all this kind of stuff. And all of a sudden, at that moment, you just happen to be in such a place where you can hear a radio, and that particular radio station happens to have a paid commercial that just, wouldn't you know, it's just too much coincidence.
I have a strange one for you. Every once in a while, when there's absolutely nothing to do, you'll channel surf. And I've had this happen way more than once, and I'm sure that the listeners have, and maybe you have as well, that I surf into a episode of Outer Limits, and it happens to be the same episode as the last time I tuned into Outer Limits 20 years ago.
Wouldn't you know it? Yeah, I know it. Continuity. It's a form of continuity. In the reality that I'm describing, and the types of realities that I say definitely exist around us, there was no 20-year gap. You just picked up where you left off.
Wow.
And in the example that I'm talking about before, you're thinking about a vacation home, and you hear a radio announcer say, well, okay, listen, we're having a special on beachfront stuff in Florida, you know, once in a generation opportunity, blah, 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 blah. But it addresses your need. What can you do? You ask me, what can anyone do? Those of us out here that are starting, you pay attention to that. That is not, the first thing you do is you break down your, oh, wow, what luck, what coincidence. It's not coincidence. If you wanted to figure out the odds of that coincidence, you couldn't mathematically express it. It'd be so
tiny.
No,
you couldn't.
And then you begin to act on it. For example, you call that number, even if it's not, doesn't turn out to be the land that you want. That communication is meaningful. It may open up the possibility of a doorway into another form of action that you wouldn't even have thought of. It may introduce you to a real estate agent that you would have never have met otherwise. I can't predict what it might be, but if you hear something like that and you see the response in that way, then you act on it. We're talking about not thinking about stuff. We're talking about learning how to do stuff.
Sort of like Redfield's book, The Celestine Prophecy.
Yes.
When you have a coincidence come up like that, you just instinctively
move on. It means something. Don't ignore it. Don't diminish it. And mostly what that will do, well, that will begin a training process of alertness. Now you'll be looking for types of things. So you'll sit down in a restaurant, and somebody in the booth next to you will be talking about just the sort of thing that you were talking about or thinking about or very similar. There's communication out there all the time. Or you just begin to open a book, and boom, there will be the first paragraph in the middle of a book at the library. It's not even a book you're reading, and it talks about exactly these things happen all the time. They can be promoted and invited, not just, oh, what luck, it was just a coincidence. How quaint. It's not just quaint. You can change your life and your ability to live life starting at just that point. And then other things present themselves. Other things to do, other ways to listen, other ways to react with your body. I decided several years ago that I was out of shape and that it annoyed me that I got up to put on a pair of socks in the morning and like a fool, I fell over. I felt ridiculous. So I decided that I would work on my balance. And from that moment on to now, I put on my socks, standing up, balancing on one leg. An absurd little exercise. But that thing brought a whole level of awareness of body balance into mind that I have used 100 different ways. I can't even describe. It comes from my socks. So it's not like there's some formula that I can give you that do this, this, that, and the other. It will present itself to you. Start by what you can do without burdening yourself. Listen. pay attention. When something happens, and it will, because we all know these stories, don't we? We've all heard something on the radio that we've been talking about or overheard, you know, a nice go. This happens to people on a regular basis. When that happens, the first step, the great Samson Orion's advice, pay attention to it. That's your first step. Don't diminish it. Pay attention to it. And if it's possible at all, interact with it. Call if it's a number that you hear. Write the author if it's a book that you like. Call the radio station if you hear something. Whatever it is, make it an active thing. Don't just think about it.
Well, a couple things will happen. First, you'll probably overcome your fear. And second, you'll definitely be more satisfied with life.
If nothing else happened, then you're 1,000 times the winner right there.
Yeah, and people ask me all the time. I'm not a terrifically old person. In fact, I don't even like to use the word. But people say, you have a lot going on. How have you done as many things as you've done? And one of the things that you mentioned at the beginning of the second hour is that you go after things. You seek out experience and learn from as many points of sources that you can get. And what will happen is that you change. You no longer are just a mortal being. You are now this immortal being, this eternal being, even though you're limited to whatever amount of time physically by the clock you have in this life at this speed. You have lived 100 lifetimes, 100 careers in one lifetime.
Because you're living them in a different box.
Right.
Now you're in a different box. And you can break, and then there are categories of boxes and boxes that are similar, and you can break out of all of them. But now we're way down the road. We're not talking about that right now. We're talking about beginning stuff now. I know it isn't glamorous to put on your socks, standing on one leg. But the results of that can really be profound. And it's stuff that you can do. It's all great to wonder about, you know, what great things can I do? You know, what fabulous, intense, motivating, passionate experiences can I have?
Well, as you said before, we're built to do great things.
We are. But what happens most? Do passionate, great, exciting, wonderful, majestic, regal things happen most of the time? No, mostly what happens is about 10,000 ordinary, common actions and reactions and interactions with people in our society and ourselves every day. So if you're going to practice something, why not pick something that you can do 10,000 times a day rather than the once in a month, once in a year, once in a lifetime type of thing? Don't wait for that.
Well, that's a good question. Why not become a master of the things that you do 1,000 times a day?
Ladies, when you wake up in the morning and you choose your clothing for the day and you choose your underwear, and there in your underwear drawer are 12 different colors of panties and bras and hose and so on. Which one do you pick? Some days it matters.
Light or white. I'm going out
and shopping. I said the ladies for a reason. That doesn't happen in the ladies' drawer.
I'm going shopping tomorrow.
When there is a choice of colors of sock or color of underwear or color of shirt, and it doesn't matter when you're not matching your outfit, when you have reduced it down to these 3 or 4 or 5 shirts, all of which fit the bill, which one do you choose? Choose it purposefully. Your baseline will select for you. On some day, the blue stripe will just feel better, more right than the yellow solid. It just will. That's not a why. I mean, you can go into the why of that, but now you're in some mental exercise. The fact is that your system, body and baseline together and all the various attributes, likes the blue stripe today. I don't know why, but the way to find out is not to wonder about it. The way to find out is to button it up. When I go to the grocery store, I choose all the pears from the pear bin one at a time because some feel better than others. It looks crazy, but Some feel better than others. So I accept the fact that some part of me can recognize, I don't know what, freshness, firmness, or whatever it is. I do that with cans of beans, and I do that with boxes of pasta. I don't do as much as is possible, and I'm a human being, so I'm subject to being lazy as well. I don't do hardly anything without feeling into it a little bit. Blue shirt or yellow shirt? This can of beans or the seemingly identical can of beans right next to it? They feel different once you start asking yourself, can I feel the difference?
Well, what about the other things, like you say in your book, anger, joy, bitterness, love, hate, grief, fear, excitement, tenderness, sorrow, awe, devotion, shame, serenity. Can we get better at those things too?
We can get better at them if we don't bottle them up. Sometimes we don't have a choice. You're getting a ticket for speeding. It's not a great idea to let the policeman know just how angry you are.
Yes.
So there is self-preservation involved in that. But most of the time, we don't really have that restriction. Most of the time, we can really be as angry as we want, or as happy as we want, or expressive, or as sorrow, or as sullen as we want. If we feel bad, the first step is not necessarily to medicate ourselves out of it. Maybe there's a reason for being sad or depressed for a while. I know there are people that fight with this and struggle with this all the time, but we're not talking about a condition. We're talking about the moods that we shift through in and out of all the time.
Exactly.
You don't have to control them, contain them, or shape them a particular way. Why not ride them? I don't stay happy particularly long or angry particularly long. If I give it vent, it changes on its own. But
well,
I would like to...
That's part of the mortal experience. We don't take a pill to get rid of it because it's wrong. It's part of the experience.
Extract from it. It's communication. Some aspect of this living being that we are that is drawing in information from who can say how many different realities or how many different dimensions along how many different lines of force along how many spectrographic lines of excitation or Kelvin degrees of heat or any different way you can say we are getting data and sensation and possibility from all kinds of places, all kinds of times. Extract from it. Why diminish it? It costs the same.
Absolutely fascinating. I can tell you, every time I do one of these shows, it seems like 3 hours is 3 minutes, and tonight has been no exception to that. It's just unbelievable, the ground that we've covered and the scope of this book. I need to let you listeners know, you should pick this book up. It's called Manifest Zero, and the zero is kind of like the null symbol. So if you go shopping for this book at Amazon or Barnes & Noble online, just use Samson Orion as the artist's name, and you'll find the book. And it is available at both stores, and shortly will be available at X Squared Radio as well. One last bill-paying thing I need to do, and then we'll have a final word. With only a few missions left, the space shuttle fleet will soon be decommissioned. Now, this spacecraft has carried the entire planet into the next millennia with dozens of satellites, probes, and experiments, and it has inspired us all. I never got to Florida to watch a launch. I always wanted to, but I never got the time. I was just too busy, just like you are. And that's why I like to shop at the space store. I have a model of the space shuttle orbiter, and it's about 25 inches tall in my library. Visitors always stop and comment how fantastic the detail is, because I want to keep the memory of this great program alive, because it represents the best efforts of the human race. You can too, by clicking the space store sign at X Squared Radio. They have great stuff for kids of all sizes, even ones big as me. Got a birthday or a holiday coming up? Visit the space store at X Squared Radio. You just might inspire the next generation of space explorers. Well, it's been a wonderful 3 hours, and I want to thank my guest, Samson Orion. We didn't get a chance to talk to your wife, If you'd like to come back on the program again, we can certainly schedule that in a little while later, and then maybe we'll try to get her on. She's an amazing woman, too.
I think so, certainly.
A teacher of yoga and has been able to, I was going to say put up with Samson, but she's been inspired by Samson and is...
she has no choice. I won't let her do anything.
Exactly. Well, maybe beyond that, I don't know. But it's hard to talk to one being without talking about the other half as well.
True enough. True.
And we appreciate your coming on. Now, this
it's
program...
It's been my pleasure.
Of course, is listened to live by a lot of people, but of course, is listened to even more at the archives. So you'll need to go to bbsradio.com and click on the X Squared Radio link and go to the archives for March 5th, and you'll be able to listen to this program as often as you like at your desktop. And I need you to pick up the book, too, so that you'll understand some of what we talked about tonight. It has been a wonderful evening, and I appreciate you more than you know. I have been changed by reading your book, and we will communicate further at a later date. So I appreciate greatly.
Thanks to you as well. Good night.
Good night. Earth Explorers, thank you very much for joining us. I do want you to remember who you are. And remember that in here, the result is always positive. We do that because we want you to go out in the real world, in your work world, in your family world, and we want you to have a positive effect, because in here, we believe that everything we do will eventually affect the universe, and we do it on purpose. So, peace, Earth Explorers.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a BloginService.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.